Hello, everybody, and welcome to Season 5 of the Common Grounds Unity Podcast. Jesus valued unity and prayed for it. We believe unity begins with Jesus-centered relationships, gathering around a table, sharing a cup of coffee or a meal. We like to say unity begins with a cup of coffee. So grab a cup and let's get started with another episode of the Common Grounds Unity Podcast. Good day. Welcome to another conversation with the Common Grounds Unity Podcast. I'm Kevin Witham. Glad to be back with you for another, what I believe is going to be a great conversation and learning experience for me, and I hope for all of us. Co-hosting today with Veronique Weber. Veronique, it is so good to be back with you. How are things in Boston? How are things in your ministry and just what's happening in your life?
I got to say the best news out of Boston is that the snow is melting. That's what I can share right now.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I don't know of any better news than that.
Well, we all remember that you are a frozen peach. You know, you're from Georgia, yes, up there in Boston. So I'm glad spring may be coming for you. Hey, real quickly, before we get to our guest, do you have any, last time we were together, I think we talked about a furniture refurbishment project you had underway. Anything new for you there?
Nothing new. I'm still riding my success from the Victorian wash basin that I found on the side of the road, sold for $50. So right now I'm just focused on getting rid of things from the basement and not acquiring anything new right now. Spring cleaning.
I hope you get a lot of lesson applications out of that. That's just the way God takes us from the side of the road and rebuilds our life. What a great metaphor. There you
go. Look at that. I'm going to write that down. Next lesson.
There you go. You got a whole lesson there. You can build on that. Well, Veronique, we're welcoming back today Kyle Spears. Kyle has been a good friend of Common Grounds Unity. He believes in its mission, and he has been a guest on our podcast. If you go back to episode 92, our listeners could hear him in a discussion with Douglas Jacoby, John Mark Hicks, and Marty Solomon. He was also with us on episode 121 on a theme of healthy church. Kyle is the founder and the host of the Truth Trauma podcast. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist, holding a Master of Science in Marriage and Family Therapy and Counseling. He's married to Christy. They live right in the middle of the country in Omaha, Nebraska. And you can also learn more from Kyle through his truthtraumatheology.com website. And there's a podcast that he does as well. So, Kyle, welcome back to Common Grounds Unity. How you doing? What's kind of new in your life and work and ministry? What's got you excited these days?
It is so good to be back. When I got the text from John, I was like, I'm coming back. So I'm grateful to be here. You guys are allies to me. And I love the fact that we're in community with each other. As far as my life goes, I took the last year off. I would almost say it was like an extended sabbatical. I decided to write. Writing is an interesting process. You realize as a first-time author, you're going to write probably three books as you write your first one. It's weird. But I've been doing that. I've been raising my kids. I got a 5 and 3-year-old. My son is in kindergarten. We just started Cub Scouts.
Oh, those are sweet years.
Oh man, it goes fast. It's kind of stressful, not gonna lie. But being a dad, being a good one, demands your full attention. And my wife, you know, growing in terms of just being a good husband, you know, and understanding my wife as a mother. You know your wife, but then you got to get to know her as a mother. And it's been good, you know. And we moved into a new home, so it's been full.
That sounds like a very full year. We got to have you back to talk about how to write a book, how to just get started and how that process went. Kyle, tell us a little bit about your book and just that process and both what it's about and how you even get going on something like that.
So very briefly, okay, the book is about bearing the image of God. And I've got a co-author, his name is Michael Burns. And a couple years back, right before the pandemic, we did a podcast, and out of that podcast, we're like, we should write a book together. And we decided to begin the process back then. It's taken quite a while, obviously, with the pandemic, and then we've had different editions that we have written. But it's really about bearing the image of God. What does that mean to be an image bearer? What does that mean to have God's sort of commission upon you. And as a human being, as a human witness, like that's part of it is understanding our humanity. So he's coming from a theological perspective, and I'm coming more from the psychological perspective. We're also taking a look at what does it mean to bear God's image individually, but what does it mean to bear God's image collectively? That's a big part of image bearing that gets skipped over, is the collective image that we present to the world. It's powerful stuff. And Mike he's a whiz, man. He's a machine. He can put out a book at the end of the week. He's that good. So it's been a pleasure to write with him.
Well, I'm excited to read that. Look forward to that coming out and getting the final product, and then maybe us talking about it here. Wouldn't that be good? So
next podcast. I love that. I was just speaking at a Women's Day for one of our sister churches in Indianapolis last Sunday. And it was about unity. But one of my points was having Christ identity instead of our identity of ourselves. And it's one of those things that will always be needed. So I look forward to reading it as
Amen.
Well. Yeah. I love our topic today and having ears to hear and eyes to see. Specifically for myself, I have been in a learner's seat about what that really means biblically for the last few years. I think I am a recovering addict of busyness and just learning how to be still, learning how to hear, learning what I'm listening for. And so Jesus speaks about this so much in the gospel about he who has ears to hear, eyes to see. You know, as a professional marriage and family counselor, as one who's focused on truth, trauma, and theology, can you speak to the importance of strengthening our ability to listen and to be able to see?
Absolutely. Yeah. What's convicting for me is when I look in the gospels, I think it's Jesus asked 307 times. He asked questions, 307 across four gospels. He asks 183 actual questions, because you know the Gospels repeat certain questions. But he asks questions 183 times. That's a lot. And he only answers three. So it's almost right out the outset in terms of who Jesus is. He's a detective. He is a cultural detective. He is fully human, but he knows all the answers, which, I mean, that is the definition of humility. And so for Jesus to spend so much of his time asking questions, I think to me as image bearers, as people who we are Christ's pupils, I think that informs us. I think it tells us a little bit about how we even, you know, what our posture, you hear this term posture is used all over the place, but it's like, how do you present yourself? Are you curious? Are you genuinely curious? Because Jesus is the ultimate example of being curious. He's constantly curious. He asks people the questions that he already knows the answers to constantly. But how often do we, although we can't read other people's minds, he's known as the heart knower, right? We see in scripture, we don't know other people's hearts, but we don't ask questions nearly as often as he does. Why is that? It's kind of odd. So Jesus has such a humble heart, and he asks questions. And I think that's one of the sort of the keystones of whether or not we're humble, is how curious are we?
Kyle, is it fair to say that good listening skills are in short supply these days? And can you speak to us about how this is affecting our society? And you know, particularly how your profession and what you're called to do in life kind of help us as a society and as the people of God as well to do this better.
You know, recently I have been pondering, and you ask a very good question, Kevin. I've been pondering why we seem so, I would almost say, closed-minded. And I ran across a video the other day, and one of the things it talked about is ego, right? We all have an ego. And a lot of times, ego is kind of this, well, I'm not here to learn, I'm here to win. Our society is in a kind of a crisis where we are just constantly trying to one up. And it's ego. It's fear-based. And honestly, even in my own life, like, so real talk, I've been looking at where do I have ego? What would I do if I wasn't on the proof? What questions would I ask? How would I actually live my life if it wasn't fear-based, if it wasn't about becoming adequate, if it wasn't about proving I'm enough? Because that's what it really comes down to. That we are burdened with worthlessness. We are burdened bearers, burden image bearers. And so part of that puts us in this, I need to prove. Most of the time, just know this, when we talk to people, they're probably not there to learn, they're probably there to win. Especially if we're getting into, political conversations, cultural conversations. People aren't as empty as they seem, right? And so we're empty of the things that we do want, and we're full of the things that we don't want. And a lot of times it's just there's a lot of ego. And so I think when you become a disciple, a pupil, mathetes, right, in the Greek, that we're disciples, we're learners. You to some degree, you kind of just realize, okay, ego's over here now. And so the question I think in terms of listening, it starts with where do we put ego? Where does that go? First and foremost.
Can you elaborate a little bit and give us some practical suggestions that might help us to grow in our ability to listen better, to see others better, and to just really hear them? What are some things that you would advise us on?
Well, first and foremost, relationship is a contact sport. Yeah.
Amen.
Relationship is a contact. Yeah. That one hits you on the way home.
Yes.
Right. And so that's first and foremost is that we're dealing with people and we're also people. So it starts with soft skills. Jesus, when he comes and again, over 180 times he asks questions, he has a remarkable tendency to be compassionate towards our weaknesses. I mean, a bruised reed, he will not, I mean, it's he will not snuff out a smoldering wick. And I think what we lack a lot of times is just soft skills. So I want to use what I call the lover model. I got it when I was in school and I've used it ever since. And this is a while ago that I learned this, but I've used it with clients. I've used it to train others. It's called the lover model, and it stands for listen, understand, validate, empathize, and repeat. And I think it's really important because a lot of times people don't know how to even validate, and they don't know the difference between validation and empathy or understanding what goes into understanding or even listening versus hearing. What would be the difference between those things? Right. So let me just start with listen, right? So listen, understand, validate, empathize, and then repeat. We'll get to what repeat means. So the reason why we listen is so that we can hear. Veronique had talked about in our prayer in the pre-meeting that we don't just want to be people who see, so to speak, but we want to be people who can hear. What you listen for is the most important thing. When I'm listening to someone as a therapist or a minister, I'm listening for their experience. Okay. And I think what happens a lot of times is we listen so that we can respond. Right. Because I'm ego, right? I want to prove. I want to prove something about me that I'm enough or I'm competent or I'm not an idiot. I'm smart. I'm dependable. I'm responsible. And so because of that, I'm listening to prove something. And we'll see here when it comes to understanding. I'm not trying to connect my dots. I'm trying to connect theirs. I'm trying to figure out how they did the math. And I think for some of us, it's like, I can't lean into where they're coming from because they'll think I agree with them. If I understand, then oh my gosh, they'll think that the way they're thinking is right. Oh no. And it puts us in this place where we can't hear. I mean, there's times where like in my own marriage, where I'm at my worst. So let me just be vulnerable. There's times where I don't do this well. And there's times where it's 45 minutes, an hour gone by, and I've been listening, and my wife doesn't feel like I hear her. How often have we been in situations where we put the work into listening, but the other person doesn't feel heard? That's demoralizing. What do you mean? I've been listening for 45 minutes. Yeah, but you don't hear me. So listening is first and foremost the goal. What's the goal? What's your agenda? Do you really want to hear where this other person is coming from? Do you really want to know what it's like to be in their shoes right now? Okay, before I go on to understanding, any questions with listening?
I had to mute myself because I'm amening so much over here. But wow, I mean, there's so much. I know how the Bible tells us to rid ourselves of selfishness, but that's like a Holy Spirit type of work, because that's so hard to do, to set that ego aside, to set that agenda aside, and to be able to, wow, look for the other person's perspective actively. And not to come in kind of knowing what you want the result to be. Wow. I don't have a
Well,
question. I'm just listening.
and in addition, I'm a little bit like Veronique. I feel like I'm getting some great therapy I need myself here. Great advice.
We'll bill him. He'll bill us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll expect a bill, Kyle. As you talk about listening and that experience with your wife, where you've been listening for 45 minutes, but she doesn't feel heard, how do we listen better, and how does the person on the other end, how do we help them to feel that they're being heard? I mean, I don't mean to just give them a feeling, but that they are being. So how do you address both sides of that?
Well, first of all, we send 90%, 80% of communication is with our body, right? I mean, it's our tone. It's all packaged, not just it's bigger than words. So a lot of times I will use my face to listen, right? Because your face tells people what your ears are doing. When I get done with a full day of therapy and coaching, my face is wiped. Because I use my face to listen. If somebody tells you something and you have this vacant, checked out expression, neurobiologically, you're telling them that you're checked out. They're going to feel alone. So your face tells people what your ears are doing. What are you doing with your face when people talk to you? That's number one. Okay. Secondly, I think what's important is that my goal, right? People can feel your agenda. They can feel whether or not you're looking to counterpoint them. And so what I find that Christ did is he emptied himself to be to be made use for the Father's vessel. Like he emptied himself. In Philippians 2, we see this, taking on the very nature of a servant. Right? So what is our goal? What's our agenda? So when I'm listening, I'm really presenting to the other person that I'm here for them. I'm on their side. I may not agree with them, right? Empathy doesn't mean agreement, right? And we'll get there in just a moment, but I'm here for them. I am for them. Listening is part of what sends that message, Kevin. Okay, so if you no other questions, I'll move on to understand. Okay, so understanding
Oh,
is
I've
where
got questions, but I could
oh,
be
go
with you
ahead.
all day.
Go ahead.
I don't want to keep you've got clients to get to, I'm sure.
I only
Go
got one
ahead,
more
Kyle.
today. I only got one more today. Okay, so understand real quickly. So let me kind of run through these. Understanding is where we communicate, I want to get it. And what's important when it comes to understanding is I'm not understanding so that I can make sense of it for myself. This is where I think a lot of people get into trouble. I'm not trying to connect my dots. A lot of time people have breakdown instead of breakthrough because you're trying to connect your dots. This isn't about your dots. This is about their dots. This is about their math. And I think some of us, at times, even me, I'm afraid to really lean into their math because I really don't agree with it. Again, that's part of that ego. I don't like your math. I don't do it like the way you think. And I don't want to use compassion to send the wrong message. Right? And that's not our job. Our job is to relate. Again, relationship is a contact sport. I want to get it. Sometimes what you can do is you can just kind of check for understanding. You know, I really want to make sure I'm getting this right, and then present what you think you understand. Because a lot of times when it comes to understanding, if you don't take the time to make sure that you understand it, you'll validate the wrong thing. There's many times in my marriage where I have said, okay, here's what I understand. And here's what I understand. Let me go right to validating. And my wife's like, yeah, you validated something I don't feel. Right? Did I get that right? What else should I know? Kevin, did I miss anything? What did I miss, Kevin? Right? Yeah. It takes ego over here for me to be open to that. Right? So it's, I'm trying to figure out where the other person is coming from. And that is my goal. That's my agenda. Okay. And so a lot of times when it comes to understanding, you really got to ask, are you really trying to connect your dots or are you trying to connect theirs?
Yeah. So that old practice of active listening, asking clarifying questions, being sure that you're understanding them and not filtering what they're saying through what you want to hear them say. boy, that's good.
Well, and then too, Kevin, real quick, here's something that's important, you know, for our listeners. If you're listening right now and you feel like this is just a crash course and it's like, oh my goodness, this is so much. I think it's important that when you ask questions that it feels like an invitation versus an interrogation. Okay. Mm. Sometimes we can ask questions in a way that makes people feel interrogated versus it feels like an invitation.
That's okay. Good.
And here's how you know. If it's kind of like putting the person backed into a corner, it makes them feel like a lose-lose. If I answer this way, then you're going to judge me. And if I answer this way, then, you know, I've already failed. It's no open, like, hey, it's okay. I want you to feel safe to tell me how you really feel.
Mm.
That comes up so much in parenting. Cause by the time your kids get home, you've already gotten the email from the principal. And so you're already coming in with the agenda of what did you do today? You know, instead Ooh. Of asking for their perspective of like, hey, how did everything go today? Did anything happen that you want to share? And like, just not it being an interrogation, but actually, wow, waiting for their point of it, even as children. So being able to know that we have opportunities to do that in multiple relationships in our lives, and our children shouldn't be ones that we get to interrogate. We need to ask them those questions as well in that same respect. So this is feeling personal right now a bit.
Well, and in church settings as well, how much conflict could be avoided if we really went in with a heart to understand rather than to be understood first and foremost, and to kind of really find out, you know, not only where the common ground is, but where are the real differences that we sit down and have a civil conversation about and really hear each other.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of the next, so we have listen, we have understand, we've kind of touched on those. Now we have validate. This one gets really tricky. And validate's tough because, you know, what we really want to send to someone, and pardon my language, is that you're not an idiot. Whatever you feel doesn't make you wrong. And I think that's important because I think a lot of times people don't really share their truest feelings with people because they already feel like, oh, I'm an idiot for feeling this. I shouldn't feel this. I'm a Christian. I shouldn't feel this. I'm blessed. Right. And so when we validate someone, we basically tell them they're not an imbecile. Now, sometimes if it's an offender, like, It's someone who's caused injury or whatever, and we cause injury. Then sometimes what happens is we struggle to validate the other person because we didn't mean to, right? I didn't mean to hurt you. Well, here's the thing: is that intention doesn't sanitize impact. Okay, intention does not sanitize impact.
Well, that's a quote. That's tweetable.
Just pause for that.
Intention doesn't sanitize impact.
Wow.
Right. And so I struggle with this as a defensive person because I always want people to see my motives. That's ego. Right. I need you to see me as good. That's ego. I'm already redeemed. I'm claimed. I'm loved. That's not the issue here. The other person has something they're working through. And so when I validate, I focus on what the pain is doing to them. Right? I can see that this made you feel that way, right? And what I want you to know is that I care that it made you feel that way. I make it more about the pain than me as a person. Got to put ego over here. Okay. So just, and this is what I tell people is the body holds the story. When I need to make space in my body for your story. You know, Veronique, I'm talking to you. Let's say we're talking about parenting and we get really full because it's stressful and overwhelming. Oh, it is. And what's hard for us sometimes as parents is to make room for our kids and all mm-hmm. of their emotions. It's hard work, but the body yeah. holds the story. And I think part of what happens sometimes is we don't validate well because we feel like if I hold room for your story, then my story goes away. No.
Wow.
That's not what's going to happen. I know that's the fear that I don't get to have a story now. Okay, that's ego. Ego's worried about who gets to have a story. Okay, Jesus wasn't really worried about that. So that's an opportunity for people to agree. And again, it's like for some people, it's like, if I validate where you're coming from, then I'm agreeing with your bad math. No, we're all human. We struggle with math. All of us at some level struggle on an emotional level. We struggle. I struggle. I was at small group, but we lead a small group and I was sharing with one of the guys, I'm insecure. I struggle to do math and my emotions sometimes. So validation doesn't mean you agree. Right. It doesn't mean that you're saying, fine, I was wrong. I was, you know, a horrible person and we shame puddle and cue the shame storm. No, right. That's not what that means.
Oh, that's good stuff.
So good.
Yep.
Empathize. So here's an interesting thing I found out last year. Compassion and empathy aren't the same, right? Compassion and empathy have different networks in our brain. One is a reward pathway, the other is a pain pathway. So a lot of times people will do compassion, which is I feel for you. Your pain and you are over here. Empathy is where I get next to you while you're feeling it. Now, your pain doesn't become mine, but I enter you. I enter your pain experience. Okay.
Yeah.
The reason why we struggle with empathy, this is hard. Churches struggle with this. We'll talk more about this in a moment because we're actually putting our brain in a situation where it has to deal with the pain pathway. And when we feel pain, because we pursue pleasure and we avoid pain, this is basic CBT, right? When we engage pain, it doesn't feel good. That's why we mm-hmm. prefer compassion neurobiologically. Okay, so empathy's hard. So I care about how this is affecting you. That's basically what we say when we empathize with someone. I'm not saying I agree. Like there's times with my son is 5 and I feel he finesses me sometimes. That's ego. But I'm being honest. I feel finessed.
No, it's true. It's true.
I do. I'm like, and I take it so personal. Oh, I do. And it's like, I don't want to use empathy right now because I feel like I'm rewarding, you know, something that I just think is trivial. But that's gaslighting. We just don't call it that as parents, right? So I care about how this is affecting you. That's what we do when we empathize. I'm close enough next to you in your pain that I've got pain circuitry that's getting activated too. But I'm not going to back away because you'll feel alone. I don't want you to feel alone in the experience. That's what we're getting wrong as a society. The way we do things, it makes people feel alone in their pain. They're lonely. Mm. You're right. Guess what? You got the facts. You want to red pill everybody to death. Fine. Okay. But you're lonely. How's that working out for you? Right? So empathy is about, I care about how this is affecting you. Okay, real quickly, repeat. Sometimes we get flooded. Flooded means that I've got really big feelings, right? So it's hard to feel and deal, okay? When I got big feelings, sometimes I might need somebody to sit with me while I work through different layers of it. That's just the way it works. Relationship is a contact sport. So sometimes with our kids, they may need us to repeat this cycle. What? I got to go back through again. And church leaders just like, man, do you know how many meetings I've had with this congregant? Ain't nothing changing. Here we are again. And it just goes on and on and on. So you have to continue to repeat.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a question just about the empathy, because I'm an empath and I'm also a women's ministry leader. That's a hard combination for me because I don't just watch people feel, I feel it so deeply. But when you're in a ministry of over 300 people, that's a lot of feeling. And I
Oh,
can
yeah.
have fatigue often, where it can manifest itself into wanting to ignore emails that look like urgent. Like, just, I don't want to get hit again. Like, I don't want to have to feel so deeply again. And we've had a really rough start of the year in our ministry. And so I can just feel like it's just March and I still have to feel for all these other months of the year. And so I don't know how to even balance just the, I want to have empathy for people, but I also want to not fall apart every night and still have something left over for my family and myself. So what's the balance? Like, what does that look like practically?
Veronique, that one's hard. And I'll say this as someone who I do therapy, I minister. It is hard. We're human. It was hard on Jesus. He was a man of many sorrows. It's hard on every leader who's ever lived. I mean, I look at Moses, and the way that the Hebrew writer writes about Moses is that he was the most humble man that ever lived. But if you look at the actual word for that term humble, is he was the most burdened. Right? That actually makes a lot more sense when you look at Moses, because he struggled with anger and he struggled just like everyone else. And was he humble? Yeah. But he was burdened. Right? And so, Jethro comes along and is like, hey, why don't you delegate? And so that's been for me a game changer, I think, is okay, well, what did Jesus do? What do we see in scripture? I need to delegate. I need to make sure that I've got people around me. I need my support net. Like, I need my people. And then I would also say that in this little, lover model, something that's been very helpful for me is realizing that I make it about pain more than it is anything about anything else. It's about pain. It's about what pain does to human beings. And this is their pain. Just because I'm with them, next to them, doesn't mean I enmesh myself in some sort of codependency and become a wound mate with them in their stuff. That's hard to do as you come alongside people, though. So I'm not going to give you a clean answer because I don't have one. It's hard. And the more we do it, the better we get at it.
Wow.
A wound mate. I have a new word
I know.
there. Boy, that's easy to become, especially for an
It
empath, as
is.
you say, Veronique.
It is. I'm in my Moses era. I need to get in my Jethro era. So,
There you go.
you
Well
know.
said.
So we have, this was amazing just being able to hear, I feel like personally, what I can do to really live out this lover model. What does that look like though for institutions and organizations and churches about, you know, their ability to listen and then create these safe places for these models to really be lived out, to actually have these spaces to listen, to empathize, and to validate one another? How does that happen on a larger level?
I think that, first of all, you ask a very good question, and I just want to be very humble and say that this is my perspective. However, I think that there are people listening who have valuable things to add in answering your question, because you've got a really big question, right? Is the institution. That's a big thing, right? Because there's different types of flavors. So, number one, Jesus, he connected. I mean, Jesus made family everywhere he went. He would connect before he would correct. And I think as Christians, we feel that it's our job to correct and correct. And connection just feels, I don't know, sentimental, but it's not. It's Jesus. I think of like the three of us on this podcast right now. The stories, like we could all take a story, probably have us in tears, of when Jesus bent down and lifted our chin up. And when he connected with us, Kevin, when he connected with you over the course of however long you've been a Christian, which is a long time, Veronique, for you, and Jesus connected. And so I think we have to remember that that's what it comes down to, is our ability to connect. and then correct. Okay, we still got to correct, but I think institutions, it feels like that there's this like, I don't know, this sort of like nameplate of I gotta correct you. I just that's my role. The other thing is people belong and then they behave. And I think churches struggle to give people a place to belong if they're not behaving well. Well, here's the thing that churches have to remind people is that Jesus's love for us doesn't go up and down with how fast we change. In the last year, I would say for me personally, in my walk with Jesus, and it makes me emotional thinking about this because he's so, God, Jesus is an amazing lover. Like he just loves so well. Basically, I feel like what the Lord has been sharing with me is, son, I'm not going to love you more if you change faster. Right? He's above that. Churches, I think, struggle to love people if they don't change fast. Right? Because our anxiety shoots up. And I get it. We want people to behave. But what Jesus does is he makes them belong. You belong to me. I'm your brother. I'm your Lord. You belong to me. All those disciples, they all, man, they all messed around and left him. You know, one didn't come back, but they belong to him. Churches have that opportunity. That's a huge opportunity that they are there to remind people that God's love is not going to change if you change faster. It's just, he's above it. And then, of course, I think there's just a humility that I can talk more about for leaders specifically when they're talking to congregants to have. I think whether it's marriage or ministry, I always tell people you can get any conversation back on track typically if you ask a couple of things. Number one, which is what don't I get? So if you're a church or you're a church leader and you're talking to someone who doesn't feel understood, they don't feel heard, just simply stop them. Or let's say three of us were talking to our spouses, or the four of us were talking to our spouses, and you just stop. And you say, hey, what do you feel like I don't get? What do you feel like I don't understand right now? They'll tell you, I feel like you don't get this. Okay, cool. That's my mission now. The one thing you feel like I don't get is what I'm going to focus on understanding. Right? And so a lot of times the conversation goes here and all over the place. Stop going all these different places. What do you feel like I don't get? Right? That's the number one thing. And then, the most unfair part. So I think of where a lot of churches, they've got a lot of angry people. Churches are struggling. We got angry people. People are angry. They're grieved for a lot of different reasons. So one of the most important things, whenever there's anger, always ask, hey, what's the most unfair part? You feel something's unfair, right? Unfairness is usually related to anger. Okay. So what's unfair? What's the most unfair part about that? Well, that doesn't feel, and all of a sudden people's energy will pick up and it gets the conversation on track, right? And now we can have a productive struggle, okay? And that's what you want. You're gonna struggle, but we need a productive struggle. Anyway, those are a couple of thoughts.
Oh,
I'm in the classroom right now.
Me too.
Just that to connect before you correct that they belong before or they behave. You know, we're trying to think, oh, I got to get this person to do this thing, but belonging precedes that. And then we're not doing it. It happens naturally because they feel the love. I mean, this is putting these into practice allows us to really be that light on the hill that God intends for his church. And so I just see so clearly how being able to implement this on a church level, institution level, given the skills from your profession, just would help us to shine even more for God. So thank you.
Boy, it kind of makes me think, Kyle, I think about how some of the New Testament letters are written, right? Paul, he has a lot of correction for Corinth. But you know, he starts out, you know, to the church of God at Corinth. You know, he always affirms that they're loved in Christ before he goes into, you know, you are a part of the people of God. He often refers to churches as saints, you know, not you bunch of lowly sinners that need to get everything corrected. And what a great model, I think, for our own helping people to sense, you know, you're a part of the people, you belong. Now let's talk about living this out well. I feel like I've been in a workshop here, and I'm going to go back through and listen when this drops, and just with my notepad. And I hope our listeners have their notes out and are jotting some of this down. Let's shift gears just a little bit. It seems like today there are so many folks who have kind of come out and claimed some form of trauma from their church community and from church cultures. And I think those in leadership can sometimes get defensive or maybe dismissive. What would you say to those who are maybe dismissive of their experiences, or who might suggest, hey, you're just being overly sensitive, or you're overreacting? How can we handle those issues better?
Kevin, I've been thinking about that recently. It's interesting you bring this up, because to me, I realized that the opportunity, you think about those, like those iceberg pictures, where on the surface you got this little small piece of ice, but below the water, there's this huge iceberg. And I think that there is something below what you're asking about, which is, let's say someone kind of just has that immediate dismissiveness about them. Well, let's back up a couple steps. Okay, trauma, first and foremost, a lot of times is a response that is dismissive or involves denial or shock, right? So a lot of times when people are presenting with being minimizing or trivializing something, that has to do with, in a lot of ways, how they relate to their own hardship, to their own trauma. So the iceberg isn't necessarily just their response. The iceberg has to do, well, this is how they've been dealing with their own story a lot of times. So if I'm dealing with someone who's dismissive, I want to understand their story. Yeah, it's hard to create space in your body with people who are dismissive, because we want to get right into facts. We want a war of facts, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where we want to go. But when someone is dismissive, I'll just slow it down and I will begin to connect with, okay, can help me to understand your touchstone memories. Help me to understand what you went through. How do you define resilience? Man, you've been through a lot too. How did you get through it? And then what happens is people will kind of help you to understand what they used. And sometimes it's not the healthiest thing, right? Sometimes people will should on themselves. People will shame, right? Shame stands for should have already mastered everything, right? And so that's part of people's approach, their strategy. So whenever I see gaslighting, whenever I see someone trivializing or dismissive, I see that as a strategy. Again, compassion versus empathy. Empathy, you're activating someone's pain circuitry. And I really want to honor that for a moment. Like when I'm dealing with church leaders, Veronique, you were just saying for a moment as a church leader, yo, your pain circuitry is lit up. You ain't just carrying your pain, you carrying other people's pain constantly too. So a lot of church leaders, they carrying a lot of pain. And this is what the data shows. When you look at the American Bible Society and the Barna Research Group, I have a really cool presentation I just did for our church. I did a mental health workshop and I presented from this data. And it's really cool because you can see why church leaders and pastors and what their preparedness is. Why they respond that way, there's data that backs it up. I can actually, we can put that in the show notes as far as that booklet that goes through. It's very helpful.
Oh, that'd
and again,
be great.
Barna does incredible research and so forth. Yeah.
All right. We'll look for that in the show notes. Appreciate that.
So on your podcast, you've interviewed many Christians outside of your family of churches. How does meeting them with curiosity rather than suspicion really strengthen your faith and understanding of really who God is and how he's working on a bigger scale?
Yeah, well, let me just be vulnerable. When I first started my channel in 2020, first of all, that was an interesting time to become a creator, was during the pandemic. I didn't realize the burden that it would mean to just go from being a therapist to then adding as a sort of creator and podcast and all that. And all of a sudden, I'm getting stories from around the world, people who feel safe enough to finally say something they've never said for 30 years or whatever. And it just, I don't know that I did a good job of being a healthy container in the beginning. I think I got pretty saturated and I took on some extreme beliefs, I think, about how helpful I could be. And now, of course, I realize that my goal is to understand people's story. And a lot of times that itself is therapeutic. But I think in terms of being curiosity, I've had some curiosity fatigue when I'm not at my best, Bernique. When I'm not at my best, I'm not curious. When I'm not at my best, I become willful. I have a lot of ego. I just want to sort of fact people. I want to red pill people. When I'm not at my best, I want to get to, I'm a bottom line guy when I'm not at my best. And so when I'm being curious, I make space in my body. And for me, I mean, I've kind of been doing some research about how kind of Jesus operated. There's like nine scriptures where he used solitude. And there's like almost a thought process, like Jesus was kind of an introvert. And I'm an introvert. So I get overwhelmed by, at times, not getting enough. I have to have solitude to function. I'll just say that. But if I do that well, like when I'm at my best and I'm doing solitude well and I'm using it well, it allows me to make room for people and their stories. Because, and from minister or mental health therapist or podcaster, creators like you guys, creating space inside is probably our most important move. Like that's the next move. Otherwise, your weaknesses will flare up. And it's hard to be curious when you're burdened. It's hard to be curious when you're not loving you well, so to speak. I
Thank
don't know if
you.
that answered your question. I'm so sorry.
It answered questions that I'm sure I have for other reasons, for sure, but I think that goes along with it, for us to really take God's perspective of his bigger picture for his church. We have to be curious. That's one of the hearts behind this podcast, is for there to be more questions about what we do have in common, instead of suspicions about what we don't. So I think curiosity really does speak to that unity that is after the heart of God, for sure. Thank you.
So
Absolutely.
real quickly on the suspiciousness. So I do a lot of work with especially in coaching, but a lot with counseling on the inner critic. I did a cruise with Disciples Today. My wife and I, we went to Hawaii last year. It was really cool, but we had this theme of unburden, and one of the burdens that people have is what's called their inner critic. The inner critic is an interesting one because it will tend to judge self and criticize others. And so when someone is suspicious instead of curious, a lot of times it's their inner critic who's in the cockpit, right? That inner critic, and some of us actually have what's called an inner terrorist, actually. But the inner critic, you got to be really careful when someone is becoming suspicious because that's their inner critic going into overdrive, trying to get the situation to become predictable or solvable. And so a lot of times when we're suspicious, we just want things to feel solvable. Like I want to get, again, we're not our best. We're a bottom line people. And Jesus, I don't know, he just wasn't his bottom line. I mean, yes, the gospel was his bottom line, but as far as people, he saw them as he saw people as a process.
Kyle, this has been, boy, just a great conversation. And more than that, I really feel like I've sat in on a workshop with so much practical help. And I know our listeners probably are feeling the same way. I think this is probably one of those podcasts that people will go back through and listen again and say, I need to jot a note down about this or that. I'm also impressed by how many I use the term tweetable. I don't know, maybe there's a exable or whatever it is today. Just how many kind of statements you pack in that are packed with some power and have some oomph to them, that are memorable, going to be memorable to me. But you're always a blessing to Common Ground Unity. We are glad to have kind of fellowship together in this, and just so appreciate your sharing your time and your insights because these are just a great value. And I want to direct our listeners, before I give you an opportunity to kind of close out with anything else you'd like to say, I'd like to just remind our listeners that you have a podcast, you've got a website. Folks can go to truthtraumatheology.com. That's truthtraumatheology.com. We'll put that website in the show notes, but you all can get more from Kyle and be blessed by his ministry. Is there anything else before we get to, I think Veronique and I could both continue this conversation into another hour through the afternoon and be blessed by it. But is there anything else you would like to kind of share with our listeners before we get away?
Briefly, if someone is wants a little bit more in terms of content, I have a Patreon page, and you can go on Patreon, type Kyle Spears, and I've got a community there that has been a real blessing for people who are looking for safety. I've actually got a community with inside of that, that people have been able to process things. I've got someone who runs circle processing. It's a really cool format for dealing with big feelings in a group setting. And then I've got a book club. I'm going to start in probably May, June. The Shape of Joy by Richard Beck. I'm actually be interviewing Richard Beck coming up. Dr. Beck is amazing. He wrote a book called Unclean. Phenomenal book. Anyway, yes. I'm going to be interviewing him on his new book, The Shape of Joy, and then doing a book club. So if someone's interested in, like, what's the psychology and the theology of joy? Then you're more than welcome to become a part of the Patreon community and a part of that book club as well. That's it.
Those are great research. We're going to have Richard Beck on in a couple of podcasts down the road from here.
You are?
To talk about the book as well. So hope everybody listens to your interview with him and listens to ours as well. Just good stuff to come from that book. Oh, yeah. And and his ministry as well. Veronique, so good to be back with you. You got anything exciting just on the horizon here?
Wow, this was incredible. I'm sorry, I'm going to go back just because I just feel like this is such a necessary conversation to have. And so I'm definitely going to be listening back as well. But I look forward, Kyle, into seeing how the Spirit leads you to use this with parenting, and definitely parenting of littles, because this is great conversation for us to have as adults, obviously, with the church. But there's so much of this teaching that can happen at a younger age with, you know, loving ourselves, listening to others. And so, yeah, I think that's incredible. But so thank you so much for being with us today. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to the springtime, Kevin. I just can't wait to be able to be outside without shivering. We have a couple of great retreats coming up. My husband and I are speaking at our marriage retreat in a couple of days. And then our singles retreat is coming up. So it's just that the circuit time where you're traveling and speaking and sharing God's love with the body. So definitely some exciting things happening this spring.
Well, God's blessings on you and what you've got coming up. I hope you have a great spring and that we're back together soon to co-host together again. It's always just such a pleasure to work together in these conversations. And Kyle, once again, we look forward to having you back to talk about some other matters down the road. Maybe your new book. You've always got so much to offer. Thank you again. Common Ground Unity has a vision to create and support gatherings of unity-minded Christians around the globe. Imagine the good news of these gatherings modeling the prayer of Jesus in our divided world. So help us with comments, suggestions. You can email john@commongroundunity.org. If you've got some ideas, just some comments, some feedback that's helpful. If you're benefiting from our ministry, then we ask you to consider making a monthly donation to support the work. You can do that at www.commongroundunity.org/donate. So we encourage you to consider making a regular gift to this ministry. We're just really trying and hoping to be a part of the answer of the prayer that Jesus offered, that his disciples around the world would be one. So look forward to being back with you next week for another conversation. Thank you for listening to the Common Grounds Unity podcast. Please check out commongroundsunity.org to learn about who we are and to find gatherings in your area. You can also subscribe to our monthly digital newsletter, join the Facebook group, or find our YouTube channel. Until next time, God bless, and remember, unity starts with a cup of coffee.